Anyone wants to join us here? Can we move down from the bleachers to the box seats? Okay.
See, that's across from him. You don't want
to. Oh, that's
right. He spits up a lot.
Thank you very
I'm
much.
I'm still in training.
Okay. This morning, we're going to look at what's called Section Hay within the Be'er HaRishon, and we'll try to quickly move through the first part of what his analysis is, but then we will get to what I think is one of the major, major fundamental questions which people have when they learn the words of the Chachamim, which we'll save for later. He's going to address the issue of differences of opinion. Differences of opinion. Question which concerns everyone. And don't argue with that, please. The Gemara, he begins, Perakam of the Chagiga. The Gemara in Meseches Chagiga, and Daf Gimel Amud Beis in Meseches Chagiga, interprets the closing verses of the book of Koheles, Ecclesiastes, the book that we read on Sukkot. Divrei chachamim kedarvonos. The words of the sages are like dorvonos, right? A darvon is a guiding prod. You know, if you have a cow or whatever it is, and it's pulling a plow, so you'll hit it, you'll poke it with a stick to point, you know, to show where you want it to go.
It works with kids too.
Okay, just make sure it's not the electrified one.
I frequently ask them to stop using it on me.
Uchmasmeres netuim, and like firmly planted nails, baliasufos. That's a hard one, right? The people who assemble, nitnu meirayecha, they come from one shepherd. So the Gemara interprets this verse, and it says, "Hey, this is great. This is a great verse for us, because what is the verse explaining? Divrei Chachamim, the words of Chachamim. Now, of course, it's not referring to specifically the people we call the Chachamim. You know, this is what the Chachamim said. This is what the sages said. It's words of wise people, and of course, it's very, very much affecting our attitude to the words of the people who we consider our wise people, the wise people." So he says, so what is the verse saying here, and what's it teaching us? So the first thing it says is that why were the Divrei Torah, interestingly, the Gemara says, why are the words of Torah, meaning here, clearly, the words of Torah as conveyed to us by the sages, why are they compared to a darvon, to a prad? Loimar loch to teach you, the Talmud says. Ma darvon ze mechaven es hapor litlameo, lehotzi chayim leolam. Just like this darvon, this prad is used to direct the cow in its furrow, in the path that it's supposed to travel, lohetzi chayim lo'olam, to produce life for the world. In other words, because as it is doing it, it is plowing up and churning up the earth so that seeds will become plants and will produce life-giving nourishment. So too, the words of Torah are also doing that for the people who study them. The words of Torah, the words of the sages, are there to direct us. Like the prad says, no, you're getting off track. You're going away. If you go here, if you pull the machine over the rocks or over the side of the road, no life-giving, no fruit, no produce is going to come out of it. That's an unproductive direction. Quick, adjust. Get back on track. Go back here to where you need to go. That's the same way the words of the Torah, the words of the sages also guide us to where our efforts will produce. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful mashal. The Gemara continues. E ma darvan ze metaltel af divrei Torah metaltelim. Well, a darvan is metaltel. What does it mean, metaltel? Metaltel means it's movable. You can carry it around, right? It's portable. Put it in the trunk of your car, or on the, you know, strap it onto the saddle of your donkey, and you'll take it with you wherever you go. So maybe the words of Torah are also portable. Answers the Gemara, well, Tam lemer masmeres. The pasuk then says, and they are like masmeres. They are like nails, like pegs. Now nails are nailed, right? They're firm, they're strong, they're not portable, they don't move. You put them in and they're finished. What's the give and take here in the Gemara? Rashi is very, very quiet here in the Gemara. And Rav the Maral explains, as he quotes this Gemara, as he's continuing to elucidate to us about Dibrei Chachamim, he explains this line in the Gemara as follows. There are all kinds of guidance that are offered and are given by all kinds of wise people, by all kinds of people, and they can guide you and say, you know, this is the right thing for you to do now, this is the right thing for you to do now. And many times the guidance is pragmatic guidance. If you're dealing with a situation, so you say, you know something, the best way to navigate the situation at this point in time is to do this. The words of the Chachamim perhaps can also be seen as pragmatic guidance. The Gemara is saying no. They're not metaltil. They're not movable. They don't shift. They don't change. They are kemasmeros. They are like nails. Nails, you put them in place, and they're supposed to stay there, nailed, right? That's an expression we use when you put something firm and it's locked in. The words of the sages are also kemasmeros, they're also pegs, they're also locked in. On the one hand, they are like the darva, they're like the prod that you take and you move around. And the way the Maral explains this is very, very, in a very real way. Of course, we also understand that the words of the sages have a pragmatism, and they have a movability and applicability in different circumstances, and sometimes to a certain degree in different ways. But there are times where what guides you is purely pragmatic, and therefore really completely adjustable to circumstance. And what the Gemara is trying to tell you is that the words of the Chachamim is not that way. Are not that way. The words of the Chachamim are based on core principles that don't shift, that don't change. They are kemasmeros. They are like nails. They are based on fixed constants. Yes, applications shift. Situations cause some nuance into how core fixed principles are going to be applied. But it's not simply pragmatism. This is a notion, an idea, just to share with you a little bit of an expansion of this concept, which is discussed in many ways in many different sources. One I'll share with you one which is discussed by the Droshos Haran. The Ran was one of the Rishonim, and he has a book with I think 12 or 13 essays. They're each one very, very, very significant, very profound. And the Ran speaks about the two institutions that we have in Jewish life. We also lahavdil have as well in our form of government, and one is the malchus, the monarchy, which we in our world we would call it, you know, the administrative branch, and the other one is the shoftim, the judges, which we would call the judiciary / legislative branch. Okay, it's in our world the Sanhedrin, to some degree, plays both roles. So the Ran speaks about the relationship between these two, and as a very, very beautiful example, a beautiful illustration of what the issue he's dealing with is, he discusses the story we have in that's alluded to in the Torah, but is actually played out in the book of Shmuel, where Shmuel HaNavi is about to die. He's getting old, certainly. He's approaching a period where they have to worry about succession. And the Jewish people request that in place of a prophet to lead the Jewish people, they would wish to have a king. That he will lishafteinu kechol hagoyim, to judge us like all the nations have judges. And as you know, from some familiarity with the story, the reaction to this suggestion was not a positive one. Shmuel was not happy about it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Shmuel, if you think you're unhappy about it because do you think this is a repudiation of who you are, I'm much more unhappy about it. However, they went along with it. And they were given a king. That was how Shaul became and emerged as the first king of the Jewish people. What's the nature of the problem? What's the issue? What was the problem with their request? So the Ran explains that Mishpat, We speak about mishpatim, right? The Torah gives different names for different mitzvahs. Chukim, mishpatim, mitzvos, edus, and all kinds of different categories. Mishpatim we usually use to refer, like Parshas Mishpatim that we read a few weeks ago, refers to, you know, interpersonal laws, damages, torts. Right? Your ox goes and gores somebody, this is what you have to do. You steal, you create an obstacle, you create a pit in the middle of a pothole in the middle of the street, and somebody comes and trips and falls and hurts themselves or something like that. So they're called mishpatim. The idea of mishpatim usually is expressed as they're logical. You know, it makes sense. You've got to do things this way. One way or the other, you have to do things this way. Says the Ran. Of course, we also talk about them that way. Part of it is because every society has to have these kinds of rules and laws of compensation. People get in each other's way. However, one can see mishpat as indeed these kinds of rules, to be able to navigate the relationships between people. Society needs to have rules which govern the society. Even, for instance, what the Rishonim called the Kat Ganovim, a group of thieves, what we would call, let's say, the mafia. Right? In the mafia, they have rules. They have rules. The Yechveis, I don't know, the Gambinos and the whoever it is, have to...
Why are you looking at Corleone?
My uncle looked at me when you said that. You looked at me when you said that.
You're looking at
Bruce. Everybody who thinks I was looking at them, I would like to talk to after the show. The Gambinos and the Borsellinos. So they have to be able to live with each other, right? And they have rules, you know, about how they cross, how the things that they would never cross each other, they would never do this to each other, what they do for each other. There are rules of how a society has to function, but they're not rooted in truth. They're rooted in a pragmatism. A reality they have to deal with. You're going to have to be able to function together. And Torah law can perhaps be taken that way. So, explains the Ran, that's really what the Torah does when it has two different sources of power. On the one hand, you have the Melech. The king is indeed a pragmatist. Not pragmatism in contradiction to Torah. Pragmatism built on top of the Torah. The king, as the Torah tells us, is supposed to walk around constantly with the Torah. He's supposed to have the Torah with him, and he reads it all of the days of his life, because it's not supposed to be, again, a pragmatism which is devoid of Torah. But there's going to be an element of pragmatism. But there's the Sanhedrin. There are the courts, the Chachamim, the sages of the Jewish people. That their sagacity, their wisdom, is not a wisdom of how wisely pragmatic they're going to be able to be. But rather, it is to identify the truth about what should happen here. The true reaction. When the Torah says, if a person digs a hole and this thing falls into it and this is the compensation, it's not because simply, you know, now we have to have that in order that people will be responsible so that, you know, such incidents won't happen in the future. The Torah is saying it because that's the emes, that's the truth. Din is called emes. The Torah, the Gemara says, din is called emes, it's truth. It's a reality that you're projecting as to who is the owner of this and who is absolutely not the owner of this. Now, yes, that can often overlap with, and it can often resemble what you and I might have said pragmatically as well. But conceptually, we need to understand that the words of Torah are not simply a pragmatic thing. You know, with the mafia, you have no doubt that it's pragmatic. Why? Because can you tell me how could it be that they're going to go and, you know, machine gun, you know, entire neighborhoods, rob from everybody, right? Invest in concrete, right, for shoes, right, and so on and so forth, but to each other they would never do something like that, right? Is it because of truth, or is it because of the rules which they do impose amongst themselves? Is it because of a certain pragmatism? The Torah is built on a truth. The mishpat of the Torah is truth, And the Ran speaks about this in very, very magnificent terms. The king, however, his role usually is the pragmatism. And I'll give you a beautiful example which he gives, which is found in the Gemara, which is something which puzzles us sometimes. People are not aware of the second part of the din. You know what it takes to give somebody the death penalty in Jewish law?
That's right.
Two witnesses. Warning on the spot. Right? In other words, if you go and you'll be able to say, oh, we have a videotape that shows that so-and-so killed so-and-so. No question. Incontrovertible. No issues of evidence or anything else. But there were no witnesses there to warn and say, don't do this. If you do this, it's going to be a chiyuv misa. It's very, very difficult. Very, very difficult and very unusual to be able to get the death penalty. What happens if the person doesn't qualify for the death penalty? What do they get? If you read the pasuk, it doesn't provide any alternative. There is an alternative. A person who killed by mistake, under certain narrow circumstances as well, will go to a city of refuge, which is both a protection for him and a punishment for him. To some degree, he goes into exile. It's a punishment. To the other degree, it's a protection from, you know, vengeful relatives, the Gambinos. But the main thing is, again, the Torah just outlines this punishment or bust. You know, there's nothing else. Now, you know that this guy's a murderer. What do you do? So the Gemara says that there's a notion of makin v'einshin shaloi min hadin. And we will sometimes punish a person, not min hadin. Not because the Torah says that this is the punishment that's supposed to go. What does that mean? When they see pragmatically for society that something needs to be done. If you have somebody who's very, very clever, it's not that he covers his tracks so that nobody knows even who did it. We're not sure if he did it, you know, some kind of serial whatever, right? Killer or the like, that you're not even sure who it is. But you know exactly who it is. He leaves his business card. But he always does it in a way that you won't be able to give him the death penalty. So what do you do to this guy? Nothing. For this, there is the secondary role of the melech. And the king says, look, I understand what Din Torah says. I'm not giving you the death penalty as the Sanhedrin would give you the death penalty because this is truth. Because indeed it's not truth in that sense. But there is a practical and pragmatic responsibility to keep society in order. And you are wreaking havoc with that. And therefore, I have the right, and the king is given the right, to be able to exercise such things. And that's not just the death penalty. If you wanted to throw him in jail, let's say, I'm not going to give you the death penalty, I'm going to throw you in jail. Where in the Torah does it speak about jail? Once.
Yosef.
Well, and as a din.
Yeah, okay.
As a din, yes. It speaks about a jail by Yosef. Yosef was thrown in jail by the Egyptians. By the Makala. When they weren't sure what to do with him, so they gathered him into a guarded place for a few days till they got the guidance. But it's usually, and again at most also, you know, maybe just a temporary solution. To come up with such a thing, what the Gemara calls the kippah, right? This kind of a closed cell is nothing Freudian about that. So that's not a truth function, that's a pragmatic function. So the Ran explained beautifully that what happened was when the Jewish people came and they said, here they had a Navi who was giving them who had divine wisdom, whose judgments were of course judgments of truth, of Torah, and they're saying, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, or Navi, we want to replace you with a king who will judge us like the nations. They were completely underestimating or not noticing the aspect of the truth of judgment which they were blessed to have an opportunity to have. And they were saying, no, let's just replace it with this pragmatic system where there's a government and they're going to worry about it. That was the mistake. So both of those things exist. Says the Gemara, Divrei Chachamim kedarvonos. The words of the sages are like darvonos. They are like the prod that guides you into the right way, the way of life. But you might think that that's based on situational things, like the darvon. It's sort of this image. It's this stick you carry it around, and you know, here you put them this way, here you put them that way, here you direct them this way, here you direct them that way. Whatever it is, you'll adapt to the situation. Ukimasmeros. It's also like the nails. There are fixed principles here. Application it sometimes requires maneuverability, requires portability. But it's working here on fixed principles of right and wrong, of life and death. And therefore, it should be identified as such. And then the Gemara says, on to the next. What's the term nituim? It's an interesting term from masmeros nituim. Right? Because nituim, where do we usually use the term nituim? Nituim can mean two things. Nituim can mean firmly fixed, which is how it's being used here in the simple meaning. Or it can mean, and usually what it means, and this second meaning is where the first meaning seems to derive from, is a netia. Right? So if you were learning, we were just learning Shavias, a netia is a plant, something which is planted in the ground to grow. Now, of course, we would say, even in our language, we would say your feet were firmly planted. Right? You use the same, it's the same dual meaning we use in English as is used in Hebrew.
Yiddish word netia.
An inclination?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's without an ayin. That's a Hebrew, it's not an English, it's not a Yiddish word. We use it in Yiddish, but it's part of the Hebrew Yiddish. And a netia with two yuds is an incline, like something which is inclined. This is with an ayin.
Sorry, I spelled it wrong.
Yeah. So you know, you could talk about planting a tent, like the Torah does speak about it, right? Which means that you know they pegged it into the ground, they set it up. But then there's this double entendre, and the Gemara, in its typical, this is the way Chazal's Midrashim work, is that while the simple meaning of the pasuk is a firmly planted nail, but why did it choose this word, right? Why wouldn't it use a word? There are many other words which could be used. I just can't think of any of them, right? But there are many other words which could be used to describe a nail that's firmly placed in the wall. Why this entendre? So the Gemara says like this: a nail. You're comparing the words of the Chacham to a nail. You know what happens when you push a nail into something? It makes a hole. Says the Gemara. So maybe you'll say, "Ooh, you're comparing it to a nail." So then that means that it does a little. You know, it takes a little bit of a toll. It inflicts a little damage. Says the Gemara, Chmasmeiros Netuim. It's a double entendre. It's the nail for firmness, but Netuim, but planted, which goes back to the original metaphor with the cow, which is in its furrows that it's going to produce beautiful things. It's Parim V'Ravim. Instead of being Chaser V'Loyasir, it takes away. It in fact adds. Okay, so it's firm. Firm can often be seen as limiting and constraining and destroying. No, it's firm that grows. The limitations are limitations that produce positive things. Okay, so that's the way the Maral fills in this Gemara. Very, very, you know, simple lines in the Gemara. When you read them, and he, I think, you know, adds a certain life to them to understand what the words of the Chacham are. They're there to guide us to produce life. It's fixed in the sense that it's based on eternal values and principles that don't shift and that don't change. And nevertheless, despite that firmness, which one could see as a limitation, as a constraint, as something that takes away from us, no. It's a limitation that fills, that enriches. Okay. So that is the easy part. Now we get to...
Yesterday, I didn't get all of this out of those two lines in the Gemara.
Okay. Says the Gemara, Balei Asufos. But then we refer to them. We have a different word for the Chachamim, and the word for the Chachamim are Balei Asufos. Right? Balei is masters of or people of Asufos. Right? It comes from the term Lesof, to gather. And here it's going to be termed as the people of gatherings, the people of meetings, of groups. Says the Gemara, what are we referring to? Elu talmidei chachamim sheyoshvim asufes asufes. These are Torah scholars that sit in their groups, va'oiskim b'Torah, and they study Torah. Halolu metamim v'halolu metarim. This group comes up, they review a question, and their decision is tamei, impure. And this group, reviewing the same question, comes to the opposite conclusion, tohar. Halalu Aisim, Halalu Matirim. These say forbidden, these say permitted. Halalu Paislim, these say it's invalid. Halalu Makshirim, these say it is valid. All the different terms that would be used. The opposite, you know, the pairings of terms, depending on what kind of a halacha you're talking about. Right? A sukkah, which is higher than 20 amos, is not forbidden. It's invalid. Right? Doing this on Shabbos is forbidden. It's not invalid, it's forbidden. And then you have purity and impurity, right? It's not forbidden, it's not permitted, it's not valid, it's not invalid. It's a question of purity or impurity. Different halachic categories. Says the Gemara, so you have different groups discussing the same issues, all Torah scholars coming to opposite conclusions. Anybody ever hear of that before? Okay. Shema Yemer Adam. So that's what they're called, Bali Asufos, different groups. Different groups. It's like, here we go. We've gone from the beautiful vision of a Torah which is given down from the heavens to all of the Jewish people, and now we have a fragmentation. We have different takes on the same stuff. Shema Yemer Adam. So a person might say, Heichani Loma Torah Me'ata. How am I supposed to learn this Torah? How can I do this? What is it telling me? What isn't it telling me? Everything is permitted, forbidden, depends who you ask. It's not definitive, right? Is this like a question? Doesn't the Gemara identify with our questions? How do we do this? How can we negotiate this?
Like
field?
Elu.
It's not Pirkei Avos, but it's a Gemara in Erevin, which we, Mirz Hashem, are going to talk about. And this is a companion Gemara to that Gemara. The Gemara Erevin, right here, ready for action. Says the Gemara, how am I going to learn it? Talmud Leimar. So the Pasuk says, Bali Asufos, and then what are the words after Bali Asufos in the Pasuk? Nitnu Meiroa Echot. So the Gemara interjects a word according to the text that we have, but the Bach, in fact, takes it out because it's not in the verse. Nitnu Meiroa Echot, they were given from one shepherd. What does that mean? So the Gemara now elaborates. Kel Echad Nisanan. One God gave them. Parnas Echad Amoran. One leader. Who's that? Moshe said them. Mipi Adam Kol Amasim. From the master of all creations. Baruch Hu, blessed be He. Dichsiv, as it says. Vaidaber Elekim Es Kol Hadvorim Ho'ele. And God spoke all of these words. Which the Gemara is taking why does it say that God spoke these words? As Hadvorim Ha'ela, it says as Kol Hadvorim Ha'ela. So Gemara seems to be saying everything, right? Elu ve'elu. They're all coming from God. All of these words, all of the takes, all of the interpretations, they're all coming from God. Af ata asei aznecho ki'afar cheses. And the Gemara continues with the postscript, post this thing. Okay, so in other words, these are the Bali Asufos. The groups of sages, each one with their own understanding, but they're all coming from one shepherd. So he says, now you too, try this at home. Asei oznecho k'afar cheses, make your ears like an afar cheses. Afar cheses, right, is to go like this, to pay good attention. It's like afar cheses is a funnel, right? It's a funnel. So in other words, get yourself a heart that discerns and understands to listen to the people who say Tameh, to the people who say Tor, those who say forbidden, those who say permitted, those who say invalid, those who say valid. Listen to everybody. Listen to everybody. Listen carefully, and evidently you also need to do a little distinguishing. So whatever, the Gemara goes back and says the response which he said to him for this interpretation of the verse. Rashi. Before we go to the Maral, let's go to Rashi. Here Rashi speaks. Kulan kelechad omran. They are all from one God, says Rashi. Ein lecham ibnei amachlokes mevi raya mitoras eloka acher el mitoras elokeinu. We're talking here about the Talmidei Chachamim, the Torah scholars, who are all working within the same belief system. They're all quoting the same God. There's nobody saying, but hold on, how can you say that? Isn't there a Buddhist principle that da-da-da-da-da-da, or something like that? They're not. They're all coming from the words of Hashem. They're not coming with extra-conceived notions. Now, that's not, right? It sounds like a joke. Right? You have machlokes and somebody's going to quote Buddha. But isn't it happen all the time? That you'll have an argument, you'll have a discussion about something, and somebody's going to ask from something which they put forth as a value, and you'll say, but one second, excuse me. Where does that assumption come from? Why do you assume that that's the right thing to do? Did you get that from God? From the Word of God? Or does this come from someplace else? Is it a contemporary value? Now again, because it's a contemporary value, it doesn't mean that you won't search and discover it truly as a Torah value. Very often, contemporary values are reflective of eternal Torah values. But where is it coming from? The value here and the discussion is, when we're talking about these groups of sages, is that they're drawing the assumptions that they bring to the discussion from the one God. They're not coming from any other source. Further, Parnasecha Ramoran, one leader said them, communicated the words of God. Ein lecha mevi raya midivrei navi abo lachlek ha-Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody is bringing from the words of a different prophet who's going to be arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, we could say, oh, no. I comes along, you know, a Navi, like we have stories in the words of the Naviim, and says, look, I'm telling you that I heard from God, our God, the God of the Jews, the God who took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, that we should no longer be keeping Shabbos. Comes up with such a thing. So, here you have it, it's a thing. But we have a rule, and the rule is we learn Torah from one prophet, ever, for all time. And who's that? Moshe Rabbeinu. Only Moshe Rabbeinu is the Navi for the Jewish people. That's why the Torah ends, the Chamish Chumash Torah ends with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. It couldn't be Shmuel, it could be anybody else. Shmuel guided us. He told us how to navigate this situation, that situation, but he didn't teach us halachas. He didn't teach us Torah. It's all from Moshe Rabbeinu. Whether you argue or you don't argue. The Rambam says if a person comes, and he's the known, assumed to be a reliable prophet, and he comes and he says, I have good news for you, God just delivered to us the 614th mitzvah. What do? Why? God doesn't deliver 614th mitzvahs. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one prophet. If Moshe Rabbeinu would be here, so could it be. Fine, great. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one prophet that communicated the Torah. Everybody in the discussion is quoting Moshe Rabbeinu.
So when a Gemara will refer to or frequently quote the Naviim, that's for interpretation purposes, not for...
The Gemara will quote the Naviim,
right.
And most of the time when it will quote the Naviim in a halachic context, as if it's deriving it, the Gemara will say, but hold on, how can you learn the halacha from the Nevi'im? And the Gemara will say, okay, well, indeed, it's just a gilui milsa ba'alma. We're not really learning, the Navi didn't teach you the halacha. It's just that you had something, and the Torah said it, the Torah meant something. To us, we're a little bit unclear about what the Torah meant, but when you look at the Navi, you can see the way they treated it, now we know what the Torah meant. But it's not, right, it always has to come back to the Torah. It always has to come back to the Torah. There are some texts which would pose a problem, and these are texts which are addressed. There was a great chacham called the Maratz Chius. Chayas was a gadol, you know, from 18th century or maybe early 19th century. And Maratz Chius wrote books about these kind, you know, he wrote books about very interesting subjects, and one of his major subjects is, it's not a book for itself, but it's a major essay within a book, is about the places where that principle seems to be infringed upon, where the Torah might be drawing too much from the Gemara might be drawing too much from the Navi, and explains each time very, very magnificently how that is avoided. But again, so it's all coming from God, the God of the Jews. It's all coming from Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. So they're all working within a certain set of assumptions. And he goes on. So the Gemara goes on and says, in the name of God, what Moshe Rabbeinu said in the name of God. So you too, make your ear like an afar cheses, Rashi explains, me'achar shekulan liban l'shamayim, since they are all sincere, and they are all, you know, focused on the same sources, asei oznecha shomas, make your ears listen well. Ulamoid vida, and learn to know divrei kulon, whatever everybody says. Listen carefully to all the sides. Ukshateda lahavchin eza yichshar. And when you know, when it seems to you which one is right, kiva halacha kemoisai, so then determine the halacha that way. Now again, if this is a little tricky in terms of its application to you and me, because, okay, so I'm going to sit down, I'm going to decide between the conclusions of the great Beis Din of Yerushalayim and the great Beis Din of New York. I think that one makes sense. You know, so of course he's speaking here to the sages. To us, generally speaking, the way we need to function is, as the Mishnah teaches us in Pirkei Avos, Asei lecha rav v'hisalek min hasafek. You choose a mentor. And that way, you to some degree avoid this confusion. You still have to live and understand and value the confusion as it's taught here in the Gemara, the difference of opinion. But what am I going to do? So, you know, you have your mentor, right? People make, you know, it's a common joke, you know, okay, well, I have this question, let's see if I ask him, then they're probably going to say, okay, if I ask him, but for this other question, I would never ask him. I would ask, you know, this other person. There, that's avoiding it. There, you're playing a game, you're navigating these asufos, you're navigating these different groups. A person should subscribe to a school. How do you choose to subscribe to a school? How do you choose to subscribe? Who's going to, which halachic mentorship you're going to accept? So that, that has its own notions, its own methodology. But we understand that what he's saying here is, nothing here is to be dismissed. There are meaningful, significant, serious, responsible arguments and logic being presented on both sides, and it has to be waded through and decided.
Sort of the nafkamina between the two statements, in a sense. You have to look at both of them, and then you're saying that you have to say lacharav. So, in what context, you know, how do you deal with
that? The Mishnah says, what David's asking, Ezu chacham alayim mikol adam. Who's a wise person? A person who learns from everybody. On the other hand, the Mishnah says, Asei lacharav, it says twice in Pirkei Avos, make for yourself choose for yourself a mentor, a rav. One time it says that you should choose a rab, you should have a friend, you should be nice to you, should treat every, you know, give everybody the benefit of the doubt, otherwise you'll never survive, your rav will never survive, I can tell you, and your friend, and your friendships will never survive, right? You have to do that. And the other time it says, Asei lecha rav v'hisalek min hasafek, right? Make yourself, choose yourself a mentor and you save yourself doubt. A wise person, like the Rav, the Talmud Chacham, and even us, when we're dealing in general with discussion to learn to understand, we will listen. We should listen to everybody. Selucha Rav Yistalik Min HaSafek is speaking about action for clarity. What should I do? Can I do this on Shabbos or can't I do this on Shabbos? Should I go forward with this decision, with this path, or is it wrong for me to go forward with this path? Right there. Practical guidance is different than the process of knowledge and understanding, and this is something we're going to be talking about significantly in this issue. Okay, so this is how the Gemara ends. The Gemara concludes, and of course it's a companion Gemara to the Gemara which was alluded to earlier, Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yud Gimel, famous Gemara about argument, where the Gemara says, Amar Avaba Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beis Shammai Ubeis Hillel. There were 3 years that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were arguing. Halalu Aimrim, Halacha Kamoseinu. These said, the Halacha is like us. And these said, the Halacha is like us. Yotza Basko, but then a heavenly voice came. V'omara, and it said, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elohim Chayim. These and these are the words of the living God. The halacha ke Beis Hillel. But the halacha is like Beis Hillel. The Gemara obviously has a problem. The Gemara right away asks, V'chimei achar she'elu ve'elu divrei Elohim Chayim ne'emah b'zocha Beis Hillel k'vei halacha k'maisan. The Gemara doesn't ask the question that you're asking. You're asking, if they're both the words of the living God, then why aren't they both the halacha? Right? That's what you're thinking. But the Gemara is not asking that question. The Gemara is saying, if they're both the words of the living God, what was Hillel's merit that the halacha, which had to be like one of them, why should it be like them more than like Beis Shammai? if they're both the words of the living God? Why should the heavenly voice make a determination between two equal truths? So the Gemara explains why Beis Hillel was zochah to have a halacha like them, because of their character. And Hashem, that's really the subject of the follow-up section in the Maharal, and Hashem, we'll get to that and discuss that. But let's stop before the halacha k'divrei Beis Hillel, and let's talk about this. These and those are the words of the living God, which are said, in other words, in this passage of the Gemara, where it says that you have all these groups and they're coming to different rulings and different conclusions. However, you got to treat them all seriously. They're all coming from one God. They're all coming from one shepherd, in the language of the Pasuk. And therefore, you know, listen carefully. They all, in a sense, have this value. How could it be? And what does it mean? I want to, before taking the time to talk about what it means, which we will start on this morning, just we need to identify a very, very important thing, a limitation which exists in the sugya. The notion, these and those are the words of the living God, which is a pluralism, right? It's a buzzword, right? Which is a pluralism. In philosophical terms, they speak of it as multiple truths. Right, is used to say, basically, almost without limitation, I'm okay, you're okay. Right? Look, it says, Beis Shammai says this, Beis Hillel says the opposite, this group says this, this group says that. They're all legitimate opinions. But the Gemara here qualifies what it means that they are all legitimate opinions. They're all legitimate opinions because they're all drawing from the same God. They're all drawing from the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, which means that if you have a discussion, and some say, and one person says, you know, that on Shabbos you're not allowed to drive a car, let's say. Why? Because it says in the Torah, Lo Sevaru Esh, right? This past Shabbos we read it, Lo Sevaru Esh B'chol Moshe Seichem, you can't burn a fire. And a combustion engine is a fire. Right? So now there are two people who argue with this. One of them says, it's not right. A combustion engine isn't a fire. A combustion engine isn't a fire. I mean, what do you mean a fire? Do you see a fire? When you start your car, you see a fire. You got to go somewhere and take a cab, right? it's a fire. It's sure. In principle, it's a generation of energy and so on and so forth, but it's not really a fire. And I can bring you a raya from the Gemara. I can bring you a proof from the Gemara that it's not really a fire, because there's a Gemara that says like this, and there's a Rambam that says like that. So it's not really a fire. So I say you can drive a car on Shabbos. Don't quote me. I hope nobody's listening in the hallway. Right? So you can do it. That's one person who's arguing. And another person who's arguing comes and says like this. What are you talking about? It says in the Torah you shouldn't make a fire. When Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to the Jewish people, he said you shouldn't make a fire. You know what it was to make a fire then? You have to take two stones. You rub them together. It was hard work. Really, it was grinding work, right? It was really, really tough to be able to do it, to be able to produce a fire then. That was a big deal. Nowadays, you know what you're doing? You know, switch now. You can even do something to do with your remote, right? You can get you can start up the engine. It's no big deal. So what the Torah said then doesn't really bind us at this point in time. They're both arguing. Let me give you another example. Who is a Jew? Who is a Jew? A very, very controversial and significant debate existed within the Jewish people. What was it? Late 70s, early 80s, I think. Who is a Jew? We learn. We see, the Talmud says quite clearly, that a Jew is either someone who joined the Jewish people, converted to the Jewish people properly, or someone who was born from a Jewish mother. The Reform movement adopted a position of called patrilineal descent, where they said that if a person's father is a Jew, so then they would also be able to be considered a Jew. There were some arguments which were made trying to quote selectively, you know, there's Gemara and Yevamos and so on and so forth, but essentially the thrust of the position was not based on the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, it was based on certain contemporary needs, that there was a lot of intermarriage which was going on, and therefore a hemorrhaging of the Jewish people, and a need to therefore at this point to be more inclusive. At the same time, there was a raging debate within the Orthodox Jewish community about who is a Jew. So, give me a break, Rabbi, come on, everybody knows that what their position is. But there was a raging debate about who is a Jew. Why? Because around the same time there became popular a technology called IVF, where people would conceive children in an unnatural way. It's a tremendous technological advance that has produced very, very significant things. But instead of the natural way that a child is produced, an egg is extracted from the mother and meets up with seed from the father in a petri dish, in a laboratory. And then it's put back into the mother. Put back? Well, not sure. Sometimes it would be put back. Sometimes you would say, you know what, this lady is not able to produce healthy eggs, so let's take an egg from so-and-so, a donated egg. We may not even know who it's from. We'll mix it perhaps with the husband's seed, and then she'll be able to carry the baby. We'll put it into the mother. Now, the mother, her name is Mrs. Goldfarb. The seed came from Mrs. O. Goldfarb, right? She came from some, whatever it is, from an angel. Is this child a Jew, or is this child not a Jew? Is this the child of Mrs. Goldfarb, because it gestated, it developed in Mrs. Goldfarb, or is this the child of Mrs. O'Leary, you know, who gave the egg? What? Now, that's a new question. It's modern, right? Modern Orthodox, right? You've got to deal with this. This is real. This is a real new question. And the sages, contemporary sages, sat and slugged it out. What determines birth? So what happened? One of them said, they got together, the sages, passed around a few Havanas, and they started talking to him. I think it makes sense that it should be this way. And the other says, I think it makes sense that it should be this way. No. What happened was they sat down and they cracked open a Gemara Bechairis. And they said, look, you're in the Gemara Bechairis. The Gemara Bechairis, it talks about a case where a child moves. It talks about a case. It's hard to imagine how it occurred. But that a fetus moves from one animal to another animal. In other words, it doesn't come out yet. And what is the determination there? Whose baby is it? Whether it's considered a Bechara, firstborn, not firstborn. And so on and so forth. They cracked open the words of the Torah of Hashem. They cracked open the words of Moshe. They cracked open the words of the sages. And they tried to figure out from that what it is. They're both arguing about who is a Jew. One of them, the argument is taking place and saying, look, I understand this is what the Torah says, I understand this is what Moshe said, I understand this is what Jewish practice has been for the past 2,000 years, 3,000 years, but you know, I think we need to change it. And that's not included in this Gemara's description of legitimacy. It's not coming from one shepherd. It's groups without common premises. The other debate, it's groups with the same premises, with the same assumptions, working from the same Torah, and trying to determine within it. They are, as we would say, they're on the same page. They're not agreeing, or they're at least they're in the same book, right? And they're not agreeing in the end. But there's these two possibilities, right? The debate of the two people arguing about the car, whether you use it on Shabbos, one of them is making argument within the Torah and saying, I don't think this is really a fire, and I can prove it to you from within the Torah that it's not really a fire. That, I don't know if such a position on record really, but let's say there was, that would be a legitimate position. The other one that says, yeah, but you know, then the Torah said you can't use a fire. Now it's a different story. That's off the page. And that's not included in Eilu Ve'ilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. So you know that in Judaism, in strictly Orthodox Judaism, there's a tremendous, I wouldn't even say like a tolerance of a difference of opinion. There's almost a celebration of difference of opinion. It's one of the most actively pluralistic communities that you'll ever find. Right? Two Jews, three opinions. Right? All the jokes, right? They're all true. Right? You know, it's, you know, there's a tremendous vibrancy of difference of opinion. Not on the premises, not on the assumptions. The assumptions are ironclad. They're there. Everybody agrees to the assumptions, but then in applying them, there's a tremendous freedom of thought and a freedom to disagree. And it happens, you know, how vigorously it happens. And I mean, we'll talk about an element of failure that it represents in Jewish communal life, but on the other hand, in terms of the process, it shows that you know there's a lot of positive value to that. But that same world, our same world, will not display the same kind of a respect for an opinion that's off the page. I'm not talking about whether you're going to say to the person, you're a jerk, you're an idiot, because this is what you believe, and the person maybe had no reason to know better. But to be able to respect the opinion, not the opiner, but the opinion, to be able to say, oh, this, you know, that's there. This is a right, this is the same. This is the same. Eilu ve'ilu divrei Elokim Chayim. That's not true. They're not both the words of the living God. The words of the living God, we have an understanding based on the fact that we understand that the Torah is divine, and what Moshe Rabbeinu gave over to us, he gave over to us from Hashem, that there is a certain line in terms of premises that things have to work within. And beyond that is beyond the ability to claim legitimacy under Eilu ve'ilu divrei Elokim Chayim. Okay. So that's the caveat we learned from the Gemara. But what about, after all this is said, what do we do with this multiplicity of opinions? So we will begin to share what the Maral teaches, and Emir Tashem we will expand on it and discuss it more further. Maral says, very simple. Very difficult and very simple. Maral says, they're both right. Right, you know that joke, right? Everybody knows that joke. Right? You're right. You're right. You're also right. Right? You know, they're both right. Why? Because things in the world are not clear, black and white absolutes. They're not. The issues that the Torah entertains are not clear, absolute, black and whites. Remember the first time we got together and we learned the Ber HaGailah? We were talking about a difference between scientific objective wisdom to a certain degree, which we could say without hesitance, you know, has its advances over the generations, and the wisdom which we talk about, the wisdom of Torah, which is a lot more complex in terms of it representing not just simple objectification of facts, but an interplay. There are aspects. When the sages say about one thing tame, it's because indeed there are within it aspects that would appear as tame. And on the other hand, there are also aspects within it that would appear as tor. And some can lock in on one aspect, and others can lock in on another aspect. In the world which we have, which has, in the words of our works, this Iruv of Ravitov, this confusion, this mixing together of good and evil, and where things indeed aren't so stark and aren't so simple. It's a world of Arkava, it's a world of complicated networking and interaction of different parts, including good and bad. We don't have simple, plain results that would, you know, give us clear, absolute answers. It depends, to some degree, how you look at it. It depends what aspect of it you focus on. Says the Maral, the first basis for understanding and appreciating machlokas is that to a certain degree they are both right. When the sage is responsibly looking at it, they're seeing one aspect of it, and to them, perhaps again, their eyes lock on that aspect, and to the other sage, their eyes locked on the other aspect, because the things that we're looking at are complex. There will be indeed different views. People can look at the same thing and see different aspects, different results. If you think about it for a second, I mean, I'm not going to rush to give an example, but you know, for instance, that even if you're not going to talk about forbidden and permitted, right, you'll talk about the same thing. You do something. You walk out of here and you choose to do something. We could all have a discussion as to why you did that, because the action affects different things and therefore can come from different reasons, right? If you get out of here, you walk out of here and you go downtown to work, right? You go downtown to work. Why are you going downtown to work? You're going downtown to work because you have a deadline. You're going downtown to work because they're Pesach cleaning at your house and you don't want to have any part of it, right? You're going downtown to work because you have to leave town tomorrow or whatever else it is, right? There are so many aspects, right? Each action has its complexity. Everything which exists in the world has its complexity. When you go and you take a... When a person has a headache, right? So somebody will say, here, take this Advil, right? And somebody will say, no, don't take that Advil, because I know that you have a stomachache, right? What do you mean? I thought Advil was to cure headaches. Advil cures headaches and creates stomachaches, right? I mean, whatever, somebody write say the fine print, please, right? So, you know, it does both things. There's a duality. There's nothing that we can look at that we will say clear, clean, pure, absolute. So therefore we have the confusion of machlokes.
How do we derive at the halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai?
Halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai is supposed to be, that per se would be the easier part. If we have it straight down, halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, this is it, then, you know, we don't have a problem. We shouldn't have to debate. Where we don't, where we're going to start considering, you know, this issue, what's the mother? Who's the mother? Is the mother the one that produced the egg? Is the mother the one that carried the baby through the whole process? Which one is it? There's no halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai on that. So we say, well, on the one hand, the raw material, I can prove to you from many places that the raw material is the definition of motherhood. And on the other hand, I can prove to you, the other one will say that the development, the gestation, the living in there, the feeding off of this, that's the definition of motherhood. Now, my friends, don't you understand that both of them are elements of motherhood? So the question isn't, is this motherhood or is that motherhood? But the question is, which element of motherhood prevails? Which one carries? That's how you have a machlokes. And sometimes it's even with stark opposites. Tamei Tahor, kosher, you know, puzzle. So because the world that we look at is not black and white, we have legitimate differences of opinion. Now that's simple. Right? That's what we knew that. You knew that before you sat down here. But what he's saying is that goes into Matan Torah. That goes into understanding this Torah, and therefore we have to take that understanding, that principle further. Yet Hashem, we will proceed.
Teku
was because in the end, when they had all of these things, there still had to be a practical determination. We're going to talk about this more. There had to be a practical determination. Teku was where they could not, for the life of them, they weighed in, they kicked it around. Usually, you know, good people get together, they sit and they think about it, and they come to a conclusion. Here, it eluded them. The conclusion eluded them. So they said, you know, one day we'll be able to have an answer. There are pieces of this, of course, that we have. We're going to have to develop both to talk a little bit about why there is this duality, why there is this confusion, and why we go from Eilu Ve'ilu Divrei Elokim Chayim to Halacha, to saying that this is going to be the Halacha. Okay, have a good day.
Is the IVF the gestational mother?